Today, we're looking at the biggest headlines, including the latest on the quarterback battle for Colorado football out in Boulder. Let's go.
We're Locked On Pac-12, your daily podcast on the Pac-12 Conference. It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to another host of Locked On Pac-12. I'm your host, Spencer McLaughlin, D1 play-by-play broadcaster. Thanks for making this your first listen or your first view if you're watching on YouTube every day, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your number one source to stay up to date here with the Conference of Champions every single weekday. Like and subscribe wherever you are listening to and or watching the show right now. Leave a five-star review, drop a nice comment. Always love seeing that. And by the way, if you ever want a question answered by yours truly here on the show about anything, you can DM me at Smalls_55, or you can follow Locked On Pac-12 on Twitter as well. So let's go to the furthest team that is east. I think I have my geography correct there, and that is Colorado. Colorado had a 4-8 season in 2021, and so they're looking to kind of retool, rebuild, because they had a promising shortened 2020 season where they went 4-2 and Carl Durrell was the Pac-12 coach of the year in his first season after Mel Tucker left for Michigan State. And then they took, I think, a little bit of a step back compared to what their expectations were after a promising 2020 season. So they had their spring showcase. They, like UCLA, didn't do a full-on game, you know, more of an organized practice that people were able to come out to. And for those of you wondering, yes, Ralphie was there. And that is, of course, the number one thing, not actually, when you talk about Colorado football. Is Ralphie there? Is Ralphie doing okay? Ralphie looked great in mid-season form here in the spring, which is fantastic. But some actual football things came about from that game. I'm going to throw my phone on mute here and just toss it off to the side. The biggest things on the football field, I think number one, were at the quarterback position. And that's where Colorado was missing some production from a season ago. Brendan Lewis was a second-year freshman, and he certainly comes in this year in his third season in Boulder, and he's expected to be the starter, right? I mean, that's certainly the expectation. But a year ago, you know, he definitely looked like a freshman quarterback at times. He threw for just over 1,500 yards, which is not an outstanding number for the worst offense in the Pac-12 last year, 10 touchdowns, three picks, and he completed just 58% of his passes. Not a bad year for a guy who's starting as a freshman, but certainly there's room to grow in that department. So in the spring showcase, he was efficient, but he didn't throw the ball downfield a lot, which I think if you're a Colorado fan is at least mildly concerning. And, you know, it's very early and he can still improve. They've got a new offensive staff in there, but they just didn't have a lot of explosion a season ago. And coming into spring football, I think one thing that Colorado fans should have been looking for is how are they going to be able to create explosive plays? And he's not the for sure starter. JT Shrout, one-time Tennessee quarterback, is in there as well. He's coming back from an injury that he suffered last year. So it's expected to be a battle by the time fall football comes around and, you know, we get a little bit closer to the run-up to the season. I would still imagine that because of his experience last year, and look, for Colorado, 4-8 is not the same as going 4-8 for another school like USC, right? It's certainly not where they want to be, but is it a full-throated disaster of a season like it would be for USC or Oregon or Washington as well? No, or Utah is in there in that group of teams, but it's not. But it doesn't mean that they still don't want to get better, because it looked like everything was going up and then they kind of took a step back. They had a nice win against Oregon State, who was a contender in the Pac-12 North, but they really just didn't have the offense. And Carl Durrell has talked about how their defense has looked really good this spring in a number of areas, even though they're losing several guys there, which I'll get to a little later. But I don't think Brendan Lewis, certainly in the spring showcase and just from reading reports about spring practice, he hasn't, you know, claimed the job securely. I'd imagine he's the favorite, but can I say definitively right now he'll be the starter? No, and he hasn't been named that, I don't believe, for this upcoming season. I don't think anybody's named an official starter except for maybe USC, because Caleb Williams is obviously going to start out there. But, you know, the spring showcase for Colorado really didn't tell us a ton about the fall team, right? I talk about the quarterbacks because A, it's the most important position, but B, it's where we actually saw a potential starter get a lot of reps, and we had some, you know, snaps and live plays to look at there. But the fall team that Colorado ultimately puts on the field is going to be different than the one that was in Boulder over the weekend at the spring showcase in front of a few thousand fans, because Tommy Lewis, who's the offensive guard, the transfer from Alabama, he wasn't out there. RJ Sneed, the wide receiver from Baylor, who's expected to be an impact player, he was limited, did make a couple nice plays, but is not a full go yet coming off of an injury, but he's expected to be all right. They only had six scholarship offensive linemen available in this game. They only had six. So that's one reason I think they couldn't do, you know, like what USC did or what Oregon did or other schools around the Pac-12. I think Washington is doing a regular spring game as well. I could be wrong on that. Feel free to correct me if I'm mistaken. But if you don't have enough players in the trenches to be able to create two teams, then doing an organized practice, I think, makes a lot more sense. And, you know, you still want to have that community engagement. You want to give fans an idea of what to expect for this coming year. But overall, the expectations around Colorado, I think, are pretty low, and understandably so, because they're coming off of a year where I think they expected to win more than four games after winning four in six tries in 2020. They win four in 12 games in 2021, and the offense just wasn't there. It was last in the Pac-12, and they were, and it looked the part as well. It wasn't those, well, they were last, but they had some bad breaks, so they had a bunch of injuries. It was just kind of like, nah, the offense wasn't there. And the evidence is that they retooled their coaching staff completely. But, you know, there's still some things to look at from spring football that I want to get to, because there are some guys who Colorado will need to continue to build on the promise that they have showed here in the last few weeks in the fall if they're going to have a better season in 2022. First, I want to tell you about Built Bar. Summer is coming, and with summer, you're going to need some food on the go. I'm a huge golfer. I've got Built Bars in my golf bag. Maybe you're a hiker. You need to put them in your backpack. Or maybe you're a jogger and you need some, you know, post-run, your post-workout snack, something to fill you up. Built Bars are literally perfect. They taste like a candy bar, but they're not bad for you like a candy bar. 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, just 4, and 17 grams of protein. They've got these things called puffs, the first ever protein-infused marshmallow. They're absolutely amazing. They're not eating healthy as an assignment or a chore. Eating healthy is a treat with Built Bars. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCK15 for 15% off at Built.com. Three guys who showcased some real promise for Colorado this spring who will need to step up this coming fall. There were a number of names who stood out, but there will actually be four guys that I'm going to give you here. The first one I mentioned briefly earlier is RJ Sneed II, the wide receiver transfer from Baylor. He showcased, you know, in a couple of nice plays, kind of a big play explosion potential. And that's just what Colorado was missing a season ago. And they lost a couple of playmakers, Jarek Broussard, to the transfer portal. He went to Michigan State. So Alex Fontenot will be the number one running back. He was not there. He's coming back from an injury, I believe. But, you know, he's going to be the top ball carrier this fall for Carl Durrell and the Buffalo staff. But at the wide receiver position, they're going to be lacking. They were a season ago, but they lost Brendan Rice, arguably their best receiver, certainly their most productive one. He had an amazing game at Oregon last year and had some other really, really great showings. He went down to join Lincoln Riley at USC, and I understand where he's coming from there. You go from a team that was last in the Pac-12 in offense a season ago to a team that might very well be first in offense in the Pac-12 in 2022 with Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams down there. So they're going to need depth at the wide receiver position, but they also just need some headliners. And I think Sneed has the potential to do that. He comes over from Baylor, and you think about Baylor wide receivers over the years and Baylor offenses in general, you think of explosion, you think of big plays, you think of speed, and this is a guy who can certainly do that. So I think he needs to grow into that wide receiver one role, or at least be a very productive number two at the very least. But I think that that's got to be someone who, if Jordan Lewis does end up being the starter, he has to develop chemistry with, or else Colorado's offense is just not going to get to where they want it to go to improve in 2022. On the defensive side of the ball, and Carl Durrell has been praiseworthy of his defense throughout, and he's been pretty openly critical of the offense. He likes what he's seeing on the defensive side of the ball, and their defense was not the problem a year ago. He knows that. They completely retooled the offensive staff, and I think that defensively, if they can be where they were a season ago, they'll be fine. They could still improve, but like I've been saying, offense is the problem, not the defense. But still, a couple guys have stood out. Now, these are names that Coach Durrell talked about in a press conference and was extremely praiseworthy of. Jordan Wolverton, who was a quarterback originally when he got to Colorado, and Ben Finiseth. I apologize if it's Finiseth, but Finiseth is what we're rolling with here. He's a former wide receiver. Now, both of them have made the switch to defense, and they're playing in the secondary. And these guys have been making plays. Finiseth had an interception in the spring, or maybe it was Wolverton. One of them did, had an interception in the spring showcase, and they are looking like guys who are going to be regular members on the back end of the defense for Colorado this year. And one thing they talked about that I thought was really interesting and also completely understandable when they were asked about making the switch and kind of how it's going is they said, yeah, you know, there's an adjustment. There's things we have to learn for sure. But having played offense makes playing defense easier. I think that switch is more common than going from defense to offense. But the advantage of these guys who are playing in the secondary is, you know, one was a quarterback, Wolverton, and one was a wide receiver. That's Finiseth. They understand how coverages work, and they also understand, because they had to read them on the offensive side of the ball, but they understand even better what the offensive players are thinking. So they talked about how it's helping them recognize concepts to make anticipatory plays and just understand where the quarterback's going to go in his progression. I think that's why you've seen, you know, quarterbacks go from playing as a signal caller to being a receiver sometimes, but also sometimes, as we're seeing here, they'll switch to the other side of the ball and play in the defensive backfield because those are the guys that they're watching most closely. You know, physically, that's also the most logical place for them to go. Not a lot of quarterbacks who could switch over and play linebacker. A small handful, but it's not something that you're going to see a ton of. But interesting thing about these guys, Jordan Wolverton, Ben Finiseth, they played together at Durango High School in Colorado, and they also played together in middle school. And in high school, they led their team to the 3A state title in 2020. So they also have that chemistry component. And that's, I think, an important factor when you're looking at two guys who are making a switch to the other side of the ball, because in the secondary, you want to be on the same page and know what the other guys are going to do, right? You want to have that sort of chemistry, that sort of familiarity with guys. They certainly have that. So those are two names to look out for on the defensive side of the ball as well. Finally, Jamar Montgomery. He had 4 tackles in 65 total plays run in the spring showcase, which, you know, for one individual guy, not a bad rate. And Carl Durrell had a lot of good things to say about him and said that, you know, he wants to see guys like Jamar Montgomery, who's listed as an outside linebacker, but will kind of play that edge position, you know, hybrid defensive end, put your hand in the ground sometimes, stand up other times. But he listed him among several edge players who are adding depth that he says Colorado just didn't have last year. And the defense was solid, but it can always improve. And Jamar Montgomery, a guy in the front seven who Colorado will need to step up this season as well. Going forward for Colorado, there's a number of things to look at. And the biggest thing I think is, you know, is program moving in the right direction. And they just completely revamped the coaching staff. They got a new offensive coordinator, Mike Sanford, who had an interesting quote comparing Colorado right now to Stanford football back in 2007. Now, he was on that Stanford staff with Jim Harbaugh at the time, and Stanford used to be, as we all remember, very, very bad. And now Colorado, and, you know, Stanford then, of course, grew to be one of the premier teams in the Pac-12 for a long time, and they have since come on tough times in the last several seasons. And breaking down their spring football and all that sort of stuff will come later in the show, not this show, but a later episode, as we're getting to every team here on the Pac-12 podcast, which is why you should like and subscribe if you have not already. And I thank you all for continuing to do that. But the interesting thing about that 07 Stanford team is they didn't get over 500 until 2009. So if Samford is saying, well, you know, this reminds me a lot of that team, you know, they're a little down right now, but starting to build and move in the right direction, which I mean, they could be. I wouldn't say there are a number of huge recruiting wins for Colorado that indicate that. I think we have to wait to see the on-field performance to know if that assessment is actually accurate or if it's just something he's saying to try to get fans and alumni, you know, feeling positive about where the program is going. But that Stanford team didn't go over 500 until 2009. I don't think anybody expects this Colorado team to be a 500 team or better this year. So what he's saying, if he's comparing it to 07, is that he expects them to be a competitive team in the Pac-12 South in the next couple of years rather than this year, which I think is a realistic way of looking at it rather than saying like, oh no, we got to come in, we got to turn around, do it right now. It's not that way for every program. And I think Colorado is one where it's tough to do a one-year turnaround just because of where it's located and the history there. It's not, you know, a reboot, you know, like USC is going to have with Lincoln Riley, where they can bring in a coach like that, get a bunch of guys in the transfer portal, and then say, well, we're on our merry way to, you know, rebuilding us back to where we want to go. So the offense last year, last in the Pac-12 in yards per game for 2021. So they hire Samford, who's, you know, been in a couple different stops, but now comes to Colorado and is bringing a little bit of a new approach. So I think that, you know, one thing that you see if you read stuff about Colorado is they're trying to spread the ball around a little more and be a little bit more versatile in the way they use the whole field rather than being, you know, kind of vanilla on offense. So I think that's one thing. And a guy like RJ Snead is going to have to be a part of that if Colorado is going to pop. So one more storyline I want to get to for Colorado going forward, and it does come on the defensive side of the ball. But first, I want to tell you about BetOnline, your number one source for all your betting stats and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including this year's basketball playoffs and the start of the Major League Baseball season. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the game starts. The last thing coming out of Colorado spring football in terms of headlines and, you know, where they're looking next is how the defense, which was solid a season ago, is going to rebound after losing a number of players who made an impact. So they lost Nate Landman and Carson Wells, and Wells was second team all Pac-12 in the linebacking unit. They're gone to the NFL draft because they're out of eligibility, I believe, but regardless, they're going to the league. They also lost Makai Blackman and Christian Gonzalez. Gonzalez was all Pac-12 honorable mention a season ago. They lose them from the secondary. Gonzalez is going to Oregon and Blackman is going to USC. I think ahead of 2022, defensively, Colorado should look to the transfer portal, because if they're going to put a product on the field defensively that mirrors what they had last year, I don't know if they have the guys who are going to be able to step up and fill that sort of void, that sort of production, because that's a lot. It's a lot to lose. You lose multiple all Pac-12 performers from your defense. Those guys are not easy to come by unless you can snag them in the transfer portal. So I think that's where Colorado has to be looking for their linebacking unit and secondary. And there are some nice pieces there, no doubt. But, you know, I talked about Wolverton and Finiseth on the back end, but they're not playing corners. They're playing safety. And so Jamar Montgomery, he'll have to step up in a big way, maybe be a little bit more versatile rather than just being an edge player. Might have to play at the second level, depending on how things shape out. But I think if you're Colorado, you expect to look to the transfer portal there to try and add to the defense. And, you know, just you're just trying to build momentum going into 2022, right? You're trying to have good things happen. You're not expecting, you know, getting bowl eligible would be a great season for Colorado in 2022. I think a great season, because expectations are really, really low, but I think it'll be tough to get there. To wrap out the pod, John Garcia Jr., the director of recruiting for Sports Illustrated, is coming on. We'll talk about what impact these spring showcases or spring games have on recruiting, and also who are the top transfers coming into the Pac-12 this year. And I'm joined now on the pod by John Garcia Jr. He's the director of recruiting for Sports Illustrated and a regular here at Locked On Pac-12. John, great to have you back. Let's just dive right in. We've been talking about all these spring games this week, and our coverage of that here is going to continue next week. We will get to every single team and, you know, look at the biggest takeaways and players who are in playing time, the storylines. We'll do it for every single team. That's the nature of the show. We are Locked On Pac-12, not Locked On Pac-8. This isn't 1994. But anyway, John, I want to ask you, a lot of coaches will point to their spring game and say, well, you know, it's a big recruiting day because we have some recruits coming in to visit. And I think it's more applicable for some schools than others. You know, a place like UCLA or Colorado that did more of a spring showcase, I feel like it's less impactful. But other games are, you know, actual games where they're marketing it in a major way and trying to maximize attendance there. So just broadly speaking, for all these schools that want it to be an actual spring game, how much of an impact can that actually have on recruiting and the guys who get to their stadium that day?
It's a big deal, Spencer. I mean, there's only a few big spring game weekends in April every year, right? I mean, there's however many, you know, Division I teams, 130 plus, half of those are Power Five schools, so 65 Power Five schools. There's only three big weekends most April. So even if you divide it evenly, which it's never even, right, 20, 20, and 20, these kids got 20 Power Five spring games they can go to any given weekend. So if they go to yours, it's a big deal. And obviously the coaches that understand that, try to package that into kind of an all-encompassing spring game weekend. And you get that kind of balance as a recruit where you're still doing your basic visit stuff, right? You're meeting with your coaches, your families, academic folks, you're putting on the jersey, photo shoot, social media, all that is happening anyway. But now you pair that with an actual game day like atmosphere, not only the fans and the stands and all of that, but even the preparation, right? If you're a running back, you're sitting in the running backs room with the other running backs on the current team as they prepare for this game, their final checks, little audibles that they're going to use if the defense comes out in a certain formation, et cetera. Now you get a little bit of insight on that and you can feel how your future position coach really, you know, engineers that room regardless of position. So you get all of the elements of a game day, but it's less pressure than an actual game day. So the coaches are a little bit more loose and they have much more time to spend with recruits as well. So easy to sell why spring game visits are big, especially this time of year relative to the other unofficial visits that go down on these college campuses. Usually they're short and sweet on a junior day or a typical unofficial visit where there's really nothing else going on but maybe a spring practice. When it's a spring game, it really creates a lot more data points for recruits to dive into, and that's obviously important in trying to figure out where you want to go to college.
Recruiting is huge. That's why we talk about it so much here on the pod. It's, you know, I think there are some people who think like, oh, people worry about recruiting too much. Like, it's not everything. You know, a team that didn't have a single five-star can beat a team that had a bunch of five-stars. It happens. But generally speaking, the teams that recruit the best are also the teams that win the most in college football when you look up at the end of each season. Again, not always true, but broadly speaking, that's applicable. The transfer portal now has created an entire new section on 24/7 Sports where you have your high school recruiting class ranking and you have your transfer portal rating because of the one-time exemption. There's just more guys in the portal than ever. So I wanted to ask you, John, as you look at 2022 football in the Pac-12, who do you think are going to be the most impactful transfers? And let's look beyond Caleb Williams, because that is that is painfully obvious for everybody.
You took one of my answers, man. Come on.
Yeah, I know that. I'm sure you really had to dig deep and really get into the nitty-gritty about how impactful guys like that could be. But beyond Caleb Williams, who's going to start, he'll be the best quarterback in the Pac-12. He's a top prospect in the 2024 NFL draft. So we know that is going to make an impact. But what other names are out there that you see as coming into the Pac-12 and are names that Pac-12 fans are going to become familiar with because they'll be playing a lot and making a lot of plays on Saturdays?
Well, even just at the quarterback position, I mean, that's the natural place to start beyond Caleb. There's been a ton of movement in and out of the Pac-12. I think one of the early kind of under the radar wins in the portal was Cam Ward picking Wazoo over a lot of Power Five options. Kid out of Incarnate Word in Texas, legitimate dual threat, big arm, really showcased a lot on the field last year. And there's a lot of people that think he's got NFL upside. So Wazoo bringing in someone like that, I think, is a pretty big deal. I think Bo Nix at Oregon, hello. I mean, obviously a ton of experience, and maybe as much experience as any quarterback that hit the portal. Bo Nix as a three-year starter at Auburn, going up to Oregon. And then I'll throw in a possibility. You know, I saw Emory Jones from Florida might be visited Arizona State, I should say. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they're in a huge market for the quarterback position, having lost Jaden Daniels. They got a ton of young, inexperienced quarterbacks on the roster, but no game experience. So I think if they can solidify Emory Jones, that would be nice for their future. But beyond the quarterback position, there's a few great fits that I found in tracking some of the Pac-12 transfers. Arizona had a great top 25 recruiting class, a couple SI99 recruits included in that class, but they supplemented that class with the portal really, really well. And I think Hunter Echols was probably their top pickup. I remember him as a recruit, blue chip pass rusher, legitimate off the edge. He's got some off-ball ability as well. So Arizona needs help in a lot of areas, and certainly defense is, and rushing the passer is one of them. And Hunter Echols could be their best player as soon as they open up things in 2022. I think staying in the front seven, I go up to Utah. You know, we know what the Utes have brought to the table from a tone-setting standpoint, obviously coming off of really the best run at the end of the season of any school in the Pac-12. And it's known, they're known for defense, right? They're returning a lot of offensive firepower, but defensively, you know, Devin Lloyd's obviously about to get drafted here as soon as the draft kicks off here on Thursday. So how do you replace him? And I think they brought in some talent at the high school level, but I love what they brought in through the portal in Muamu Diabate, the linebacker, who's as versatile as it gets. You know, multi-year starter at Florida, who has off-ball inside linebacker experience. But really, as a recruit, when Diabate came up, he was a pure, freaky first-step kind of edge rusher. And he told me when he was in the portal that he was going through the process looking for a balance between the two. And at Utah, I think he'll play inside backer on early downs. And then when the passing game is premium, he'll be able to use that pass rushing prowess to get after the passer. So I really like that pickup for Utah, which hasn't been as busy in the portal as some other programs. So those are probably my top few. I like Cam Bright at Washington, another kid with a ton of experience coming over from Pitt. And then some under-the-radar offensive gets. Jake Bobo at UCLA,
yep,
coming over from Duke, over 100 catches the last 2 years. He's really a big possession target. Now with DTR coming back, I think you got to feel good as a Bruin fan. Jameis Griffin at Oregon State, you know, they need to stabilize that offense with the running game first, and this is a big downhill compact back that I think could fit in well for the Beavers as well. So we got a little sleeper recruits to talk about in the portal, but I really like those additions otherwise.
Yeah, Bobo is someone who's generated plenty of attention from UCLA's camp this year. Chip Kelly recently said he's kind of emerging as a potential wide receiver one, and they've got no Kyle Phillips, no Greg Dulcich, and no Chase Cota, who transferred up north to Oregon where his dad played. So there's a little bit of a void there. And Kazmir Allen, if you've watched him play, you know he is as explosive of a player as there is in college football, but he's not typically a possession guy. He's, give it to him on a jet sweep and take some downfield shots. But if you're talking about possession receivers, I like that Jake Bobo pick right there by John Garcia Jr., the director of recruiting for Sports Illustrated. We appreciate your insight as always, John. We look forward to seeing you next week too.
Sounds good, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening or watching the show. See you next week and have a wonderful rest of your day.